Welcome back to Switchcast Season 5. I'm your host, Doug Tabbitt, here with my co-host, Tyler Sanders, and a blast from the past, John Sabo. He was a guest on our first podcast and a few on and off since then, so we wanted his snark back tonight, along with some of his expertise as well.
Should have brought the Malort again as a celebratory welcome back.
Pass.
No?
Pass.
That Chadwick is almost as bad. Shouldn't look a gift horse in the mouth, but it's a little sweeter than my taste. Anyway, Ethan Huffnagel, our executive assistant to the regional producer. Some say that that revenge is a dish best served cold. Well, we think that's also true with the news. We're never the first on the scene with stuff, but we're always the snarkiest. So, if you enjoy this podcast, help us out with the algorithms. Like, subscribe, share, review. That all helps us out with the algorithm so that other people can see the podcast.
Smash that like button.
Smash that like button. All right.
And really just punch subscribe. You know, no? Too intense? I'll cool it down.
Tyler, right. Smash.
I need a little more whiskey.
Or less. We have talked about cars as investments or not as investments many times in the past, but there's a new angle we wanted to touch on tonight. And the disclaimer, of course, that we are not investment advisors and we're not actually like giving advice on investments, because really they're cars. They aren't by definition investments. Well, I guess if you're on Rally Road and you buy shares of stock in cars, then they're registered with the SEC and that is an actual investment. But traditionally, as we see them, we just buy an asset and all that. But the first thing I have to get off my chest is a matter of semantics. I've been looking at modified 930s recently, and so many of them say that they've invested $100,000 in upgrades and or maintenance. And that really, no, you didn't. Can we just be honest and say you either spent, burned, or dumped that money? I sunk $100K in investments. Like, let's be honest. You're not getting that money back. It's modifications. It doesn't help you on resale. In fact, it's the opposite, because a modified 930.
This bottle of whiskey is almost fully invested.
Pretty much. It's a stock 930, while it's not as good as modified one, is worth far more than one with modifications. So, let's just throw that term out. Be honest with yourself and everybody buying it. But really, are cars investments? I feel like people are convinced they are. If they are, how do you actually do it right and how do you do it wrong, right? If we're saying that they could be good investments, which I'm going to say they're not, but let's just, for the sake of the discussion, how do you do it right and how do you do it wrong?
Balls and patience.
Okay.
I'll expand. All right, so...
Expound. Tell me more.
So,
please do.
We got to make this a glass for 20 minutes.
As we all know, and you know, things me and Doug have told people for the last 3 years, that how do I say this? Shit's got really expensive, really, really fast. You know, you look at what stuff was paid for in 2020, 2019, and what it costs now, it's almost disgusting.
Double. Yeah.
Disgusting.
Yeah.
I mean, 3.6 turbo in 2014 was 85, 90 grand. Now, yep. good luck touching one for 399, 450.
Yep.
And some of them aren't even, you know, you don't even know where those cars have been and how they've been restored. You know, you've got a 40,000 mile car. You have no clue what it was 5, 10 years ago.
Okay. So you could actually make the point that a 3.6 turbo, mm-hmm, proves that a car is an investment, because if you bought one 100%. In 2019, you would have made money. If you bought one in 2010, you would have made money. If you bought one in 2016, you would have made money. 12.
Like, if you would have bought one in 2005, you wouldn't have made money.
Sure. If you bought one in 2015 and sold it in 18, you wouldn't have made money.
Yeah.
So it's partly timing.
Well, everything's timing.
Okay. But 80% of day traders lose money. And that's in something that historically goes up in value. No, I'm talking about stocks, right? Investments.
You mean real investments?
Real investments historically have gone up over time. Yet people who try to time the market, 80% of them lose. So if you try to time cars, which historically go down in value, like smaller percentage of success are you going to have?
What does your financial advisor always say? Hold. Right? Things go down. Don't
I am my own financial advisor.
Whatever. So talk to yourself. But when things get a little rough in the market, you don't just pull it. You wait.
Okay.
Right? So when things are great, you have your choice. Collect your gains. Pay your taxes.
Or talk about that later.
Yeah, yeah. Or, you know, I mean, it's just one of those situations. It's double-edged sword sometimes with investments because you don't know whether to pull it out, leave it in. Cars are kind of the same way. The last year has kind of been a topsy-turvy sort of ups and downs with a couple cars. You don't know what's coming up, what's going down. Everything's going up. I think a couple things go down.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, buying, well.
That made no sense.
You're right. It didn't. That's fine. I wasn't going to say it, but you said it.
No sense. Cut that.
Here's one thing that doesn't work, for sure. Most of the time, well, buying new cars short-term can work, right? You buy a new GT3 RS. Mm-hmm. If you can get it at an MSRP, you have an immediate return. But that's not really an investment. That's just I game the system so I could get one at below market value.
Right.
That's not being a genius. That's not being an investor. That's just I knew they were going for 150K over, and I happened to play the game to get one at sticker 50 over.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And probably those will go down. It's really hard to take a car that sells for 200K over sticker new and think that you're going to, like, that's going to be a great investment. Right?
Well, and I think that's not just for cars either. There's all the shoes, video games, watches. Like, there are so many things where there is not.
Sheffield watches do not sell for over sticker. They are a great value. Value on merit, not just price. Sheffieldwatches.com.
Nice. I mean, you can compare a GT3 to a Rolex, Daytona, right?
Yeah.
You walk into your local dealer/AD, buy it for MSRP, walk down the street, sell it for double the value, or in a Daytona's case, pretty much double.
But that's a short-term flip.
But same thing with GT3. Also, it's still what did a GT3
RS? That's arbitrage. That's not investing.
Right. I'm going
but
back
if
to what
you bought a Rolex 15 years ago.
Right.
It would have gone up in value.
Yes.
Okay. But our watches investments? You're a watch guy. Yes. You said you're net loss. You're a watch expert.
Yeah, I've done terribly on buying and selling watches.
But have you enjoyed the experience of the watches you've had?
Well, you have to get rid of something to get something. If you want something new, you have to lose something old sometimes. Let somebody else get the gain so you could enjoy the new piece.
Yeah. Let's talk math. People are a big fan, speaking of buying cars new and holding them, especially, I think, with American cars, right? The guys buy the Indy 500 pace cars, the Dale Earnhardt edition, Monte Carlo. That is their retirement plan. So let's look at math on, let's say, a 93 Dodge Viper, right? That, by all predictions, if you were into buying new cars and putting them in a bubble, that would be a great investment car, right? I mean, nothing like it had ever been produced in the American market. Front engine V10, wild sports car, revolutionary design, fairly limited production.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about that. A 93-mile Dodge Viper RT10, I think it was also a 93 model year, sold on Bring a Trailer last year for $170,000. My numbers aren't going to be totally accurate because I ran the numbers calculations based on today, but let's just assume it's worth the same today as it was last year. So people thought, oh my gosh, that's a great investment. Look how much it went up in value. But let's actually compare it to the inflation adjusted numbers and the opportunity cost. The original MSRP in 93 was $52,000. Inflation would make that $115,000 today. So, okay, you're still ahead of inflation, not including insurance and storage costs. And I guess if you never drove it, there's no maintenance costs.
No gas.
Didn't do anything.
Or a lot of maintenance costs.
Yeah, well, not for you, for the next guy.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so you're a little bit ahead of inflation. If you put $52,000 into the Dow Jones Industrial, just into an index fund in 1993, guess how much you would have today?
I'm guessing a lot more.
That'd be, Doug, I'd go with
$273,000. $659,783. So you lost $500,000 by putting that Viper in a bubble. It is not a good investment. So that's one way that new cars sitting in a bubble, not a good plan. Not a good plan.
I remember at some point there was like a Marauder that had 12 miles on it on Bring a Trailer, and it sold for less than what the inflation adjusted cost of the car.
Right.
And the dude like, oh, we've started it up every couple of months as it's been jacked up to let everything move and keep it. And it was like this whole thing, not even inflation.
I don't have to do any of that with stocks.
Yeah. Let's go back to that Dale Earnhardt Monte Carlo.
Do you have seven of them?
I know a guy that does.
Seriously?
Remember when it had the Tasmanian Devil? And oh, yeah, he's got one of every... Yeah, absolutely.
Well, because they made like five of them, didn't they? There was like the one with the flags, well, and then there was
the cars, and there was...
Yeah, there's so many. Earnhardt.
There was one that actually looked exactly like the... Not exactly, but it was stickered like the NASCAR.
Yeah, big old number.
Drive that to Cars and Coffee now. Please.
You loan me
I will buy your coffee.
What? I need the keys first. I'm not going to go buy one.
Okay.
That's an expensive coffee.
Well, all this guy's cars have no miles on them, so you're not driving these. He's still waiting for that inflation, that investment bump.
All right. So, Sabo, you touched on essentially the concept of good timing. Mm-hmm. But part of the timing, you said balls and patience. So in order to, let's say, get a gain on cars, because they probably won't beat the market at large unless your timing is perfect and you just know, you know, I have a crystal ball. But in order to do it, I think most people follow a trend. So they're buying when stuff is going up already. And because of this contracted rise in values after the pandemic, people think that that's repeatable, right? Like, oh, I can buy a car and a year later it's worth more. But the real way to do it, the way people did it long before that, is they bought cars that nobody else cared about and just held on to them long enough. You have to be willing to hold on to them long enough for years and years. Like, I bought that Lamborghini Halpa one time. Mm-hmm. Nobody gave a crap about that. And I kept it for 3 years and still nobody gave a crap. So I sold it for a 10K loss. I didn't intend for it to be an investment. I just bought it wrong. So I was like, I'll just wait the market out. Eventually, these things will realize their gains. Well, I bought it in 2007 and sold it, like gave up in 2010. Mm-hmm. If I had held on another 10 years, the car would have gone from 35, which is what I sold it for, to 100, right? Not a good investment. I could have put that money somewhere else and made more. But the point is, nobody cared about Halpas. I could have bought as many as I wanted for 30 grand, but I would have had to sit on them a long time until somebody cared.
Painfully sit on them.
But that's really the only real way to do it, or one of the ways to do it.
I took that car to so many car shows and zero care.
I won best kit car at a car show.
Exactly.
Did you seriously?
Yeah.
Amazing.
I got the trophy.
I took it to a cruising. I took it to a cruising, and everybody just thought it was a Fiero.
Oh, man. Another way to make money doing this is to control a market, right? So there's people out there, I won't name names, but I know people who have done it recently. Lamborghini LP640 stick shifts. A couple years ago, somebody bought every single one that was available and made offers on all the ones that weren't available and immediately dried the market up and essentially doubled the value because he controlled all of the supply. There's somebody that's been doing it recently with roof cars. Mm-hmm. Every single one. The roof CTR Yellowbird is going off at Gooding Auction in a couple weeks. Estimates like $6 million.
Whoa, spicy.
We talked about that car a little while ago on the podcast when it was 4.5.
I was offered that car.
You told me it was 4.5. And at that number, I'm like, that's crazy. But somebody's controlling the market, so it's going up because they're making it happen.
And educating also.
Yes, and educating or selling.
Sure, but that's educating.
Yeah, yeah. But you need to pick a small enough market to be able to control it, right? Uh-huh. So, like, how much money would it take to control the Carrera GT market?
How many of those did they make?
It was 1,270. Like,
well, yeah, so that's, like, kind of a lot.
Right. So if you figure that, what's the average, the median value of a Carrera GT right now?
1.1, 1.2?
No, 1.5 probably.
I'm talking about, yeah, I was thinking about cars. If you take miles.
The, I, 1.1 is probably the bottom of the market with miles. So if you, because the paint to sample cars are probably 3 to 4, maybe depending
more,
on the car.
Maybe more.
Yeah, okay, more. So let's say 1.5 conservatively, maybe 2.
Let's just use 1.5. That's okay. A nice, easy number to think of.
Easy. So you have about a $2 billion market cap on Carrera GTs. If you want to tie up 2% of the CGT market, it would be $38 million. And let's face it, if you're going to tie up that market, you're buying the best examples, right? So you're not buying $1.5 million ones, you're buying the 3 to 4.
Or you buy all the bottom feeders. Just buy them all.
Yeah.
The collection of all the worst.
I've never seen that strategy work.
Buy them all.
Hold on. Let's call Ed Holman. Yeah.
No, that's the Hamilton phone. That's the Hamilton phone.
So you're probably $80 million to try to tie up the Carrera GT market. Yeah. That's not... But people do it. They buy like, oh, I got an Audi R8 V10 manual. It's an investment. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. No, You're a victim of the market if you're just riding it out.
I'm surprised how much those cost with miles.
The V10 manual sticks? Yeah.
Yeah, like a 50,000-mile car retail, like 140, 150. Just
little less than that.
I've seen them actually sell.
Yeah.
I'm thinking wholesale number, trying to figure out what it actually was sell for, but 125 to 130 has been the buy numbers on those.
Yeah. Oof. They're good cars. I just think it's funny that, like, individuals are saying, oh, I'm buying this one car as an investment, right? This market is going to go up. And I'm like, You have no idea what's happening. Like, that's cute. You bought a V10. I know a guy who has 15 of them in his warehouse. And even that's not controlling the market because there's plenty of them out there for sale.
It's an Audi.
The V10 coupes are reasonably rare, but
like a weird belly
button. Well, and I think people forget, too, that, or maybe they don't realize, that the cat is out of the bag on just about everything. People are shopping for cars. People are looking at cars. People are thinking about cars all the time. So there's no secret left that is, like, at least I don't think, that is incredibly undervalued to the point where you could buy up a significant share and try to control it. Like
Yugos.
Yeah, but are those
we could,
like,
buy all the best Yugos on the planet for like 50 grand.
Nope. You couldn't.
I couldn't?
Nope.
The best ones.
Nope.
Yugo, you know, something we don't?
Yugo convertible. They made like... Two.
How much are those?
Okay, just the coupes.
All right.
Let's control the Yugo coupe
Ford
market.
Ford Pinto.
We'll make them $30,000 cars.
Yeah, there you go. Resto Mod 1.
That's like the tact with all the, like, meme coins or, like, bad, like, cryptocurrencies is you buy them when it's like 0.00000005 cents per coin. You put $1,000 in, and then if it goes up 1,000%, you're like rich.
Crapshoot, man.
Let's do it. Yugos?
I'm not. Nope. Not in.
Okay. There's a yellow one here on the.
But
wall,
that follows. That follows what you said. You buy it when people don't care about it.
Yeah, of course.
And wait long enough for them to care.
Yeah, catch a trend on before it goes up.
Yeah, absolutely. So Yugos, nobody wants them right now.
I think you need one of these.
Follow your
That's
own advice,
That's what I'm talking
Sable.
About, man. Dude, I could drive somebody to get, on the highway.
We need to get all of the, like, stickered up Dale Earnhardt
right now,
Monte Carlos.
Right now, Tyler's looking at a 2002.
Yeah.
Can we control the Murano cross cab market?
Ethan will be king of the Murano cross cabs. You'll have to come to his warehouse.
All right, well, let's put that discussion to bed. Let's go to the shrewd negotiator. This is kind of more of a wall of shame this week, right? So ridiculous offers that come into dealers or people on Marketplace trying too hard. This was one we got offered on our GT3 RS that we have for sale. And this is a real text to us or email. You probably wouldn't be interested in some equity in an 11-year-old beverage company that is the fastest-growing organic beverage company in the United States, according to third-party syndicated grocery store scan data, that does $45 million in sales profitably, would you? Well, they said profitably. How profitably? I'd hope you're making a profit on $45 million in sales, but are you making $100,000 or $4 million? I could do cash, but sometimes the right folks understand.
The right folks? Sometimes? What?
Mm. That's the whole thing?
That's what he wants to... He wants to.
There's no spreadsheet?
I'm sure if we asked
you
him
should
for
ask
financials...
Him. You should ask him for financials. Come on, I'm...
I don't want to get his hopes up. But
discount the car $5,000.
I think he wants us to take like full trade, straight trade.
No kidding. Of course he does. He's offering you a company.
The funny thing is, he says, I could do cash, but I guarantee you he won't. That's what people always say, right? Like, I could pay cash, but I'll finance it. Well, sir, you have 400 credit score. And it's going to be 25% APR. Well, but you said you could pay cash. Yeah.
The money's tied up elsewhere. It's our investments. It's in. How about you finance?
Yikes.
Yeah. So we're not going to do that.
Another thing that's changing the world with cash. Walk into a dealership and go, I'm a cash buyer. They're like, nope.
Nope. Do you have a trade?
You need to finance this amount or no deal.
Yep.
Nuts for Sticks is a brand celebrating the manual transmission in all its forms. So forget those flappy paddles because we like shifting ourselves. Check out our fun and funny stick-themed shirts at nutsforsticks.com and save 10% on your order using the discount code SWITCHCAST. That's nutsforsticks.com and use code SWITCHCAST.
Our last segment, we talked about cars as investments or not as investments. So let's say you actually do make some money on your car.
What's that like? Sorry, I don't know. I don't know anything about that.
I don't know either. Well, other than being a car dealer, but like personal cars, right? You buy a car, you keep it for a year, you drive it, and then you make $100,000. Everybody's dream. What do you do? Well, the tax man says that you owe them capital gains tax. Which is kind of annoying. And let me preface this. This is not politics because we're talking about cars, and this is not tax advice either. This is just a rant on how unfair and how ridiculous capital gains tax on cars is. I don't like it on anything else either. But
yeah, here's keep it why, on the rails here, Doug.
Here's why it's a scam, right? If you buy a house as an investment, and you lose money, it's my understanding that you can take a capital loss so that if you then make money on another house, you can take the gain, you can offset the loss against the gain, right? You can depreciate property. Like, there's tax code that addresses these things as both making and losing money. Cars, stuff we use every day. You can't take a capital loss. I can't write off my daily driver against that whatever car that I might make a fortune on.
You don't drive your Lamborghini every day.
No, but I'm just talking about the theory of it. The
flawed.
The 997. No, it's not.
Go on.
No, it's not.
Go on.
I didn't buy the Lamborghini as an investment. It was not intended to be an investment. I bought it because I wanted it.
Okay.
So if I lose
luxury.
Money, the Maroon 6, right? I will not make money on that car. But if I lose money on it and I made money on the Lamborghini, if I sold it, the IRS would say, you owe us tax on the gain of the Lamborghini, but you can't take a loss. You can't write down the loss on the 911. You have to pay us in the gain, but you can't take a deduction for the loss.
Okay.
I'm saying it's a scam. And it's a double scam because most of the gains, well, definitely in the last 5 years, but a lot of the gains on luxury assets has been driven by inflation, right? The Federal Reserve printed money in record numbers. So that caused hard assets to go up in value, houses, cars, etc. So it gave everyone this massive capital gain. But it wasn't a relative gain because everything else went up.
Is that not in the calculation?
No, it's not. there's no baseline, right? So, like, let's say your house doubles in value, or an investment house, right? Because there's, like, your personal residence you don't take capital gains on. But, okay, let's say your car. Say the Diablo doubled in value. I go to sell it. I have to pay tax on that money. But then I want to buy a different Diablo because I like purple better than orange. Like, I have to pay the same amount as I sold it for. It wasn't like I actually made money relative to anything else. And in fact, I didn't really even
make
money.
Now, if you traded to a dealer, you trade an orange car for a purple car at a dealer, and your car was, say, let's say 500 grand and the purple one was 505, right? And you're paying, obviously, let's not talk about sales tax.
Ugh.
Right. That's another story.
Another.
But let's say there's a $5,000 out of your pocket moment.
Sure.
You're not paying cap gains.
Maybe is that, I mean, they did away with 1031 exchange on cars, right? I believe the, a number of years ago.
The money's
ago.
Not going in your bank account.
Okay.
You're just car for car. Just collectors have a tendency to, they're trading, not selling, because they don't want the cap gains.
Okay.
Now, it has, I mean, you can't sell it and then,
sure,
you know, call you and buy a car, and then because that money does hit your account.
Okay.
You get an audit, they see a $500,000 line item, you know.
Okay, fine. And again, that's not tax advice. We're not sure if that actually is an exemption under the tax code, but fair enough. That makes sense. But on principle, let's say I just sell it and then 6 months later decide I want a different car or another car. Or even that I don't, it's just that like eggs went up that much. Right. Everything else went up relatively. So I feel like if you're going to have a capital gains tax on personal luxury items, one, you either should have an exemption for those same things, or two, it should be, there should be a baseline calculation, either inflation or like an index of all Lamborghinis or all houses or whatever. Because, like, you have all these people that their houses went up in value post-COVID. Oh, I made so much money, I'm going to cash out. No, you didn't. Because all the replacements went up in value, too. Nobody actually made any money.
All right, let's just say you're walking down the street, right? You're walking Chester. And you walk by a house, there's an open garage door. And you're like, oh, it's a 250 GTO. And you're like, hi, I'm Doug. I'd like to buy your 250 GTO. She's like, oh, that raggedy piece of junk in my garage? Yeah, I'll pay you to take it away. It's been there since the 80s.
It's what everybody thinks barn finds. Right,
yeah,
how barn
Doug
finds
falls
how.
Over. Let me go over this, all right? So
how much whiskey have you had, John? This is wild.
Let's just say 250 GTE. Let's be more realistic.
No, just let me finish.
Okay.
All right, she's like, give me $5,000. You're being a nice man. Take my car away. Bring a tow truck. You trailer that thing back to your house.
And then I realize it's a fake.
Even if it is, at $5,000. But let's just say it's real.
Okay.
And you're like, oh, excuse me, RM, would you like to consign my car? Yeah, we'll give you a guaranteed value of $75 million. Your $5,000 turns into $75 million, and you sell it. You take $75 million. Oh, I have to pay tax? Boo-hoo.
Yeah, but... So what?
I'm just making a point. You just made a ton of money.
I feel like that's income. So what? It's after tax money. You already paid income tax on that money. It's not your job. It's not normal income. You just bought a car and got lucky. It's not even your business.
Okay, let's say you bought.
Yeah, it's easy. You sound like the friggin' people hating on the 1%ers. Oh, it's.
I'm not hating. I'm just saying I would be happy with my cut of that. Even after you win the lottery, you bought that lottery ticket with post-tax money.
So the government should get $30 million of that sale just for existing.
I'll take it.
I'd take it too,
but
I gotta be honest.
For the everyman, okay, let's distill that down. For the everyman.
You mean like you bought an Intimidator Monte Carlo
yes,
for $7,000
yes, and
then you sold it
for $8,000? You bought it for seven,
it for
10 years ago. You sold it for $50,000. So you make $40,000, but you've also had 8 cars in that time frame. Your Trailblazer SS rusted out.
And you opened the trunk of that Monte Carlo, and it has a real Dale Earnhardt helmet. Autographed.
Yes.
And then, like, that helmet's worth $25,000.
There you go. Why would you have to pay tax on that?
You wouldn't. I just wear it.
It would go way down in value.
I'd be like PlayStation with a helmet on him, drafting down Daytona.
But do you see my point?
I think you're greedy.
Yes, I am. I'm greedy for my money. I don't see why the government should have it. Okay.
Nobody likes paying taxes.
Okay, but if they're going to take it, have an exemption or have a baseline.
Trade it into a dealer.
It's a crap tax the way it's applied.
Trade it into Switch cars.
Who's Switch cars?
He'll hide your money.
I like how Doug's getting fired up and we're just screwing around. He's going to pop a blood vessel.
I can't stop thinking about Intimidator Monte Carlos.
Dude, I found the one with the stickers.
Dude, that one you showed me, man.
I want the sticker. Oh, there it is.
You know what I could do on
I-90? Big old 3 on the side.
We get 2 of those. We draft our way all the way to...
Just give him a little bump draft.
Stay on track here, boys.
I can't.
Speaking of...
You're talking about money.
All right. Inflation was, what, 10% a year the last few years? Let's say you made 10% on a car. Or 20%. You kept it 2 years. You made 20%.
Mm-hmm.
The government would say, you owe us tax on that 20% gain. After tax money, by the way. So if you had a 20% profit, you'd owe 25% of that, give or take, depending on your tax bracket, to the government. But we had 20% inflation. So you actually lost money.
No, and see, that's where I do agree, as entertaining as it would be to fight with you on this. Like, The not taking account into inflation, where literally your dollars lose value, like I do think to an extent in the whimsical made up scenario that John mentioned, where you sell a car for $75 million profit, like that's different. But
it's not different now. No. Now I don't like that philosophy. That's the same thing that the certain side of the aisle politicians use to tax the rich. Right. Like if you make 75
great
million,
IG, by the way,
you should have to pay taxes, but not if you make 20 grand. It's the same principle either way.
Well, but I think where I'm drawing the difference is that you obviously made more than inflation for that 75 mil. So take inflation into account for that 75 mil profit on your 250 GTO that you pulled out of somebody's garage. That's fine. But like when it is as close as you're talking about, where you actually end up losing money because of inflation or losing buying power, I think would maybe be the more correct way to put it. That is where I think I have an issue, because they don't take that into account.
They don't take it into account, period.
Yeah, they don't for houses either.
And here's the thing. No, they don't. There's no metric. Okay. It is just the dollar. So if you are gifted a house from your parents, not as part of their estate, you pay taxes on their baseline when they bought it. So if they bought it for $5,000 in the 70s and it's worth $500,000, you pay income tax on $495,000.
Holy crap.
Yes. Yes. Complete scam.
We need an accountant really bad right now.
What? Why? That is how it works.
We don't give real advice on this show.
No, but there's understandable tax code and there's real scenarios, and that is a real scenario, is that if you get a house that is from your family and it is not in an inheritance, if you inherit it, it is at the baseline is at the current market value at the time of the inheritance. If they give it to you beforehand, quit claim deed, whatever, not through the inheritance, then you get it at their baseline. And it's not adjusted for inflation. It's whatever dollar amount they paid in those dollars. Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's all a bunch of crap.
So what about all the people that took Rolexes for Porsche allocations and they sell that Rolex? Sorry.
Yeah. I had another point, but I've already... Oh, Yes, it's the scam that the government ran with printing money, right? Is they...
Doug, I thought we weren't going to talk about politics.
No. Cars.
You said government.
They caused caused this inflation to happen. So everything went up in value. So they got a bunch of income tax revenue that they wouldn't have had if they didn't print the money. So they diluted the value of the dollar and then caused a bunch of people to pay a bunch more in taxes. That's my conspiracy theory. And the end game, the best end game for them would have been the unrealized gains tax, which I know is only for the super rich, you know, total amount of money. But can you imagine if that applied to everything? Like if you had to pay unrealized capital gains on your 401k accounts and your cars that are sitting in your garage based on the Hagerty value or whatever that just says it went up, and you had to keep paying tax on those gains?
Aren't certain states... Isn't it an annual tax based on value of car?
Personal property tax, excise tax. Yeah.
So, I mean, do not do appraisals if you live in those states.
I'd say at least Ohio, which is just the one-time thing. Buy the car, pay the tax, you're good.
Yeah.
Just don't do it more than once. Don't do it multiple times.
Right. Yeah, you don't get trade sales tax credit here, which is a
bummer. That is what aggravates me. Oh, my God. I was doing all this.
That's another whole scam. All right.
That is ridiculous.
Let's go to the wall of shame today. All right. This was a wholesaler who offered me a GT3. Now, I think I know GT3s pretty well. This is an actual conversation. He started with, do you know someone wanting the most amazing 997-07 GT3 with 23K miles? Manuel. I guess that was the
name. His name.
It's what it says on his car. The climate control, doesn't it? Or is that only a 996?
Good. Deep one there.
That's a good one.
I asked him for the VIN and price. He said, well, we have to pay $155,000. And then he said, it is the nicest car ever. Quote unquote, this is the nicest car ever. I said, okay, $155,000 is retail on a 23,000 mile 997 GT3. He said, maybe, but you never saw one nicer than this car. And honestly, I've not seen too many people with the nice examples of GT cars wholesaling their cars. And I'm like, well, you're a wholesaler. Like, what kind of a message is this? You're sending me a car at retail? I said, okay, fine. Humor me. I've sold a lot of these cars, but again, send me the VIN. So he sent me the pictures, and I find the VIN in the photo gallery, pulled it up in my GT Vault database, and responded back to him. Now, he said, let's see, quote, this is the nicest car ever, quote, the most amazing, quote, you never saw one nicer. And I said, responded, right rear quarter damage, repaint, prior track use, aftermarket suspension, Canadian car, that is not the cleanest GT3
mint.
Ever.
Mint.
Minty. To which he responded, well, I was told it was nice.
Immediately pulling the parachute.
More like shyster of the week.
Nicest car ever. I've never seen it.
That's a salesman.
I kind of want to block him now.
You didn't?
No. Stop offering me cars at retail. This episode is brought to you by Sheffield All Sport Watches. The Sheffield brand was recently revived by Jay Turkbus, an owner of an original Sheffield All Sport diver he received from his parents in 1970 when he was just 11, beginning his love of watches. As an adult, Jay used his extensive expertise in product development and marketing to revive the brand that started it all. He set out to develop watches with a high level of quality and specification at a value price. His first effort, and a successful one in July of 2023, was the debut of the Sheffield All Sport Diver 1. It had the kind of build and movement that much more expensive watches use, and his debut price of $108 was equivalent to the $13 his parents paid back in 1970. Since that debut, Sheffield has expanded to a wider range of automatics and chronos, many designed around vintage Sheffield dials of the 60s. The Sheffield well of clever and unique design remains his inspiration, as well as maintaining the goal of high quality, very affordable range of automatic and quartz watches. Sheffield watches, value on merit, not just price. I love mine. Get yours at SheffieldWatches.com and mention that you heard about them on Switchcast. The mint green GT3 is back.
Let's go.
For those of you who haven't listened to the episode in 2 years, well, why would you? I don't think we've talked about it for 2 years.
Didn't we talk about it last week?
Well, not in depth.
Is this the mint, not so mint, homeless person lived in it, not so mint, back to mint again?
Yes.
Back to mint again?
Yeah, double mint.
Double mint. I remember those things with the twins.
Yeah, so Sabo gave you the 3,000-foot flyover. I'll give you the 100-foot flyover. You can also go back. There's a way more in-depth episode a while back. Anyway, 2018 GT3, paint to sample mint green, not one of one. There's actually quite a few because paint to sample is getting kind of common. And second owner bought it, certified pre-owned, financed it through Porsche Financial, blew up the clutch very quickly. I think the first week of ownership, took it to the Porsche dealer to get a new clutch. Apparently was not too kind to the Porsche dealer. Once they installed it, he immediately went out front to do donuts. Nice. Thereby roasting the clutch again.
No, that's like the break-in period, though. You gotta get it nicely, you know, worn in.
Sure. Yes. Got in a fight with the sales manager, who, unbeknownst to him, is a black belt. So
let me guess, he financed this car.
He did finance the car. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they called the cops on him. Shortly after that, the car went to a custom shop or body shop to have a wide body kit installed. It was not done particularly well, at least from the pictures everyone has seen of this. It appears that they cut the stock fenders and then kind of bonded slash welded on the wide body kit.
That was a not so mint.
We've reached the valley.
Yeah. The guy never made any payments on the car. So Porsche Financial repoed it. The sport bucket seats, the carbon bucket seats, went missing in all this process. I allege that the body shop knew they weren't going to get paid, so they just removed them from the car. That also made it easier for said homeless person to live in the car, because the photos we saw had it looked like a homeless hoarder was in there. And then the car disappeared for a while. It went to a New Jersey dealer. They had it on eBay, kind of like implying that it was a Porsche certified pre-owned car, because it was still under certified pre-owned warranty. But technically, if you resell a Porsche through an independent dealer, it voids the CPO. So an independent dealer cannot advertise a car as a CPO, because the very act of them selling it voids that warranty. But they had like the Porsche dealer plate frame and plate insert on it.
Nice.
And stuff. Ah, it was super shady.
I put a certified pre-owned Porsche thing on a race car once I was driving.
Nice.
I did.
That's good.
Nice. It then went through Mannheim with damage and structural damage noted on auto check and disclosed at the auction. It then went to McLaren Charlotte. That's where we kind of joined the story, because we called them out on selling it and they claimed to have no knowledge of the prior stuff, even though they bought it at Mannheim with a really bad CR and structural damage disclosed. Let's see. It then went from there. It disappeared for a while. It keeps disappearing off the internet every time we bring it up and tell people about it. It then went to Give Me the VIN. It sold a couple times through Mannheim there. And interestingly enough, the condition report got adjusted big time. It went from like a 2.7 to a 4.5 based on, I guess, who was maybe being paid to inspect it. Wasn't there, but I could make some connections and some assumptions there. It went to Porsche of Jacksonville. Porsche of Jacksonville had no idea about the history when they bought it. It then apparently finally went to a retail customer for about a year. Then it got traded into Porsche of St. Louis. I called them. I said, hey, do you know what you just bought? They said, no, we don't. I said, why don't you Google the VIN, which none of these dealers are doing. Like, it's not that hard to find.
Giving away your trade secrets, Doug.
It's Google, Google or VinWiki or like any they use the stuff they know. They use Carfax, they use VAuto, they use all their tools that they pay a lot of money for. But the free tools, like, Yeah, they all would have caught this. So they're like, well, shoot, we were about to CPO it. Obviously, we can't now. So then it gets wholesaled to RP Exotics, listed on their site. I call them. I said, hey, do you know what you just bought? No, I thought it was a Porsche CPO. I'm like, well, mechanically, yes, but they stopped short of actually CPOing it. And the reason you have it is because of this backstory. They're like, oh, well, all right, we're going to try to sell it anyway.
Back to the wholesale market.
No, and they tried to sell it for a while. Couldn't sell it. Because everybody else knew the history. Because
Googled the VIN.
Retail customers actually use these tools. They're arguably better at due diligence than dealers. Granted, dealers are buying in quantity, so, you know, but whatever. Takes 5 minutes to find the story on this car. Let's see. They couldn't sell it, so they took a loss and sold it to Pinnacle Imports in Massachusetts. Call up Pinnacle Imports. Hey, do you know what you just bought? Nope.
Like, well,
I'm like, so I called them out. I'm like, do you guys not Google VINs before you buy cars? They're like, no. Well, we are going to now.
You guys Google VINs at Switch Cars before you buy cars?
Yes.
We Google every VIN.
Yes. Every VIN. Use VinWiki. We use Epic VIN, which if you're not using Epic VIN, you need to. Affiliate link in the description.
Please tell
the show
me about
notes.
Epic VIN.
Seriously?
Yeah, seriously.
So they have a lot of historic listings for sale, like stuff that's not online anymore. So if somebody lists their car on a classified site or something like that, they'll like save the photos and the listing. So you can go back and be like, oh, it was listed at this dealer by this person in 2014. Here was their description. Here's some of the photos. They'll take like Copart and IIIA, insurance auto auctions.
Sure.
So you'll see like prior damage photos if it's a salvage title car and somebody's saying like, oh, well, it was just front bumper repaint. And you can go back and go, no, it wasn't. The car was bent. Here's the photos. So there's a lot of stuff that you can't find on Google because it's the pages don't exist anymore, but they've archived them.
Sure.
So you can get a lot of supplemental information. It's not a comprehensive report. Like it's not instead of Carfax, but I can't imagine running my dealer without it. So we VinWiki, we Google. We'll also Google random terms that might be like the mint green GT3. If you search mint green GT3, that car comes up. So if a car is unique enough or has unique attributes, like, yeah. So anyway, Pinnacle Imports has it now. Now, all the way along here, right, the paintwork was done very badly. It was not repaired well. It was pretty obvious to anyone who knows cars, which was funny to me that all these dealers are pleading ignorance because I'm like, okay, once you got the car, you should have at least seen it and gone, this car sucks. But no. So anyway, Pinnacle got it. They had it sold to a retail customer. Then they got it in and were like, oh, this car is a story. They said what they say. It was five shades of green when they got it.
Wow.
So
it's Harlequin?
Ooh. New market.
Yeah. Horlequin is more like what that car's been through.
All I keep hearing is track car.
Exactly.
That's all I keep hearing.
Right. So, okay. So that's the point, right? I was talking with Pinnacle. So I flew out. They flew me out, thank you to them, to actually inspect the car. I've not seen it until then. It's always been other people's eyes and internet data and stuff. They did a full glass out repaint on the car, new PPF. I flew out, inspected it, and got to actually go through the car, which was fun. But I was telling my wife, I said, this is silly. Like, bad cars are sold all the time. Cars with stories, paintwork, whatever. Like, it doesn't really matter. The only reason I'm here, the only reason I'm going to Boston to see this car is because so many dealers have tried to deny the history and cover it up instead of just owning it and saying, yeah, this car had an awesome story.
They're just
pissed. Some homeless guy lived in it. This would be a great track car. It's still a rare color. Like,
you bought a car before. I mean, not comparing this to the double mint come one, but but like you bought a car before and got the short end of the stick.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're a gentleman and you probably did the right thing, but like, yeah, somebody calls you on the phone and go, hey, by the way, you bought a POS.
That happened to me. I bought a Tour de France, no, Le Mans Bleu 360 Challenge Trolley 15 years ago. The internet was not quite as powerful then. So I thought I did all my research. I bought it through trusted source. I did some extra due diligence.
You tried a Carfax on dial-up?
The Ferrari dealer straight up lied to me. Like, absolute bold-faced lie. They said, we do not have any service records. And then I called them 6 months later, pretending to be the new buyer customer. And somebody who wasn't supposed to sent me the 40 pages of service records that they had in-house for the car.
Broken wheels.
That included a quote-unquote off-road adventure. Or off-road excursion. I don't remember. But literally in the RO, that's what it said.
Wow.
Right? So, but while I had the car, I would get these cryptic messages. Like one guy, when I had the car on eBay, messaged me and said, well, I'm only going to give you this much because, like, I know what happened to that car. And I was like, what are you talking about? Yeah. Like, I have no idea. He's like, yeah, don't play dumb. And I'm like, please tell me. Like, yes. You're making me out to be this bad guy, but you have this car that you're holding and you're not telling me.
Yeah.
Like, tell me about the damage. And I might go, oh, shoot, I had no clue. Sure, I'll take that offer. So once I did actually find out about the damage and get the receipts, I disclosed it. I put them up. And the crazy thing is, I sold it to a retail customer. And then after I sold it to him, he asked me to take my listing down because, you know, my page was archived talking about the damage. He wanted to hide the history so he could make money on it, selling it to the next guy.
Absolutely.
I was like, heck no.
Yeah.
The worst irony, this gets deeper. Like 8 years later, two more dealers, including a Ferrari dealer, got screwed on that card because the history had like disappeared, even though if they had Googled the VIN, they would have found it because it's now also on the 360 Challenge Stradale registry. So anyway, these dealers are incredibly lazy at due diligence, and that's how these things keep happening.
Do you think they write off the losses on their taxes?
They're a business, so they can. Yes.
The loophole.
Yes. I want that car back, by the way. Tour de France.
Yes.
Blue. It's in gray California interior. Now. It sold last year.
Gray and
year.
Blue interior.
Yeah, gray and what blue
interior.
What did
it sell for? I don't know.
The guy who had amazing. It.
When it was sitting in the warehouse forever, what did we sell it for?
I think I sold it for like 110.
Yeah, that's what's in my head.
I traded it. I think I traded it straight up for a BMW M1.
Yeah. Pro car body kit.
Pro car wide body. Oh my gosh. Oh.
The world has changed.
We don't think about these things.
People who say like, oh, I shouldn't have sold X car, right?
Yeah.
I traded a 360 CS straight up for an M1 and I sold that for $125,000 and thought I had won the lottery.
Couldn't give it away for $125,000. That was a fun one.
Oh. Anyway. There's a lot of things to be learned here. There's a lot of points to make. One is, who friggin' cares? A car had some paint work. You're right. Who cares? It's not really structural damage. The car didn't get wrecked. But the point is, if you know about it, just disclose it. All these dealers trying to hide the history, especially dealer to dealer, like the professional courtesy should be there.
Yeah.
And it isn't.
All right. So out of my curiosity, what's a dealer asking for Minty now?
Their plan is to put it on P-Car Market, no reserve, and to put all the old photos.
Track car.
Up there with the wide, showing the wide body kit, like showing the dirty, ugly truth, which I respect. That's why I went out there, is because they said, we're going to do this the right way. I'm like, all right. Props.
Well, and this in a sense could reset the history of this car, because this listing will be alive. Say, look, here's what it was. Here it is now. Everything, like nothing hidden. Everything is here. You can move forward.
Exactly. Like, exactly.
It doesn't disappear again for a while and then come back. Still sort of CPO, but not really. Like,
yeah.
Interesting.
And that'll be a nice like cap on that story. Is somebody got it who wanted it and who might actually want it more because of that story, because they can go to Cars and Coffee and like the guy next to him has a 1,000-mile paint to sample, who cares, freaking GT3 they never drives, be like, so what, a homeless guy lived in mine. And it used to be a double wide.
Did you smell it?
Did you smell it?
You stick your head in there and smell that?
Oh. It didn't smell like a new car, but it smelled fine.
Smelled like black ice or whatever that was. It's like, what's that Christmas tree that everybody gives you?
I do wonder what Minty's going to go for. I kind of want Minty. I can't afford Minty, but I kind of want Minty.
You might be able to afford that Minty. No reserve? I don't know.
Yeah. So this could be interesting. So
you might be living in it. Comes full circle.
Well, they always say, right? You can't drive a house, but you can live in a car. Well, that guy in California. Yeah. I took that to a literally. It wasn't his car. But he lived in it. So we look forward to seeing the final closure of this story. We're happy at least that the story is going to be fully out in the open, more than just on my podcast, because if people search the VIN, you know, this podcast doesn't show up on Carfax. So all that to say, do a little extra due diligence on the cars you're buying. Don't expect the dealers to do it, because they ain't.
Or hire us.
That brings us to the props and flops of the week.
As always, the props and flops are brought to you by Switch Cars. Switch Cars is the enthusiast dealership where we buy, sell, and consign only cars that we like ourselves. Check out our handpicked inventory at switchcars.com and be sure to mention Switchcast for special pricing. Find more information at switchcars.com or come visit our showroom in beautiful Twinsburg, Ohio.
All right, instead of a pick of the week, we're going to do the Sabo Smack Talk. We're going to go through a flyover of our inventory and see what Sabo thinks. So we got a Samoa Orange Audi R8 V10 6-speed manual coupe, 12,000 miles for $205,000.
You want me to smack talk that?
Okay, I mean, there's nothing to smack talk.
All right, it was $205,000.
That's you said 50,000 mile cars were selling for 130, 140.
You're asking me if I want to buy it. I ain't buying it for 205,000.
All right, well, 2011 BMW E92 DCT with the competition package, 75,000 miles and some nice mods.
Will you please just go to the Jeep?
Jeez, you're
giving
there.
Me like good car.
Wait, 2010 Chevrolet Corvette 3LT Coupe, 44,000 miles. It's your number.
Oh, it is.
6-speed automatic, Inferno Orange Metallic, probably a one of one.
Oh, was that one that was in the showroom?
Yes.
That's a good color.
Yeah.
That's a good color. I mean.
Speaking
to the microphone.
2015 Jaguar F-Type R, 52,000 miles, ceramic brakes, silver over red interior, only year of the rear wheel drive, supercharged 5-liter V8, but not a Coyote motor. $39,000.
Jeez, go to the Jeep.
2015 Jeep Wrangler Unlimited Sahara. Lots of great mods.
The biggest mall crawler I've seen in a while.
Over black interior, 6-inch lift.
Would you look at those wheel wells?
Oh my God.
Dude, what do they put in little plates for the wheels? Who ever says, check out my wheel wells? Whoever says that? I mean, is there any duckies on the dash?
There's no duckies.
It's worthless then. The duckies mean everything. There's every duckies,
but
like
it has a 9,000-pound winch. You can
what
pull
is it
a lot of ducks
with
that.
What are you
a lot of ducks.
You hook that up to a tree, it's just going to pull the Jeep in.
You pull a G-Wagon out of the mud when it...
It literally has wheel well covers.
The wheel well covers are ridiculous. They have a big company
They're
logo in every one of them.
What, not embroidered.
They even took the
embossed. Initials. They have initials.
They took the fenders off.
Yeah, they
it's
did.
Got it's no like, fenders.
It's like skinny.
What are those things? Is that made out of plywood?
Yeah, like look at this front. It's like so, it's so weird.
That is not sweet. Nope. Hey, hold on. Mr. Hamilton, how do you feel about that Jeep? Oh, you don't like it either? Sorry.
2006 Lamborghini Gallardo Special Edition number 166 Verde Ithaca E-Gear, 16,500 miles.
Is the roof covered in electrical tape?
No, it's factory black.
God, it's such a good color.
Was that wing off APA?
Probably.
Yeah. Oh, no, the taillights are tinted, so they work less.
Oh, mint green, 1996 Porsche 911 C2 3.8 liter RS-inspired build. Mint green wrap over ocean blue paint.
You had me at
white
wrap.
Wheels. Hey, it probably looked better than the mint green GT3 when it was painted.
Well, you saw it.
2008 Porsche 911 GT3 RS, orange.
I won't say nothing bad about that car because I hope it graces my garage one day.
All right. One more. One more. 2005 Porsche 911 Carrera, 116,000 miles, six-speed manual, lots
that
of
one?
Stuff from Sharkworks, black on black with some OZ Racing wheels, 36,980.
This was your ex-daily driver, right?
This was my ex-daily driver. Does that make it worth more or less?
I don't know. That's right now.
Doug Tabbitt has farted in the seat.
Multiple times.
And I signed the dash.
It's got a Sharkworks sticker on the window. Definitely worth more money.
All right.
Never seen snow.
Never seen snow it didn't like.
Hey, where's that blue 360?
It's not there. It's not actually for
sale.
Hey,
Mr.
sale.
Hamilton, how do you feel about six-speed swaps? You like them too?
Mister.
Okay, I'll swap your car.
Flop of the week. This video comes to us from Instagram. A few weeks ago, two people wrecked their F40s or crashed them driving on the roads. Well, this week, somebody also kind of crashed an F40. Well, they backed into a pole in a showroom. But the flop is that two idiots were filming with their phone in close proximity, and neither one bothered to actually help the driver. The one standing directly behind the F40 filming while he backed into the pole kind of like put his hand up half-heartedly and way too late. It was like, you know, dang, here's my hand. I should probably stop. I mean, it was the least exhibition of like definitive manliness I've seen in a long time. I think the dude used to wear skinny jeans.
Hold
and he
on a
his
second.
With soy.
Hey, what's wrong with skinny jeans?
Like, no initiative did,
was
taken
one of
those, there.
Was it? What did Lando Norris wreck a?
No,
F40?
It was his car. But
it was
somebody
his car.
Else.
Okay, I was.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, I just everything that's wrong with our cell phone generation.
They should send those F40s to Gas Monkey Garage. They have a history of restoring a car.
Restoring is a loose term.
Yeah, they got yeah.
Prop of the week, Sabo.
Yes. Oh,
prop
sorry,
of the week.
My turn.
That was a cue.
All right.
You know, in the biz, we call it a transition to
the biz. Listen
the biz.
To you.
Can't use the word transition here.
All right. Corvette recently has toured a bunch of racetracks, smashing streetcar records. I have to give that the prop of the week. I mean, it did Road America 2:08.
ZR1.
Well, ZR1, yes, of course. Yeah, the new ZR1 project. They are doing kind of a page out of Viper's book. Remember when Viper toured
the ACR?
Yeah, the ACR and tried to do all the lap records. Well, Corvette with the new ZR1 is trying to do the same thing. Or not trying, they're actually doing the same thing. I mean, Road Atlanta at 1:22. I mean, these are pretty fast times.
Are they going to do the Nürburgring?
It's America, man.
Yeah, but the ACR.
What does that mean?
When the ACR set the Nürburgring record,
there's a Nürburgring edition.
It was a huge deal.
It'd be cool if they did it. I hope they do it because if it's that fast, it'll obviously throw down a killer time. But I do like the fact that they're going to racetracks that.
In America.
Yeah, and they're not. You know,
they're doing kind of a one lap of America.
Sure.
Hot lap.
America.
I think
do
it's
for
funny.
Dale.
I think it's funny because
oh hey, prop of the week, Dale Earnhardt Edition Monte Carlos. Yeah.
Is that for sale,
dude? I wish.
If that's for sale, you should put your hand up.
It's probably a good investment.
Swap my '98 pace car. Uh-oh,
how many of those red bear jacks of this year?
Do they come
That'd
with
be a great
do
stat.
They come with commemorative plates?
Duh, I wish they did. I need to find one. I'll trade him a '98 pace car straight up.
What were those gargoyle glasses that he wore, Dale Earnhardt? Yeah, I'm old.
He beats me.
Yeah, I'm old.
Good night, everybody. Thank you for joining us for Switchcast with Doug Tabbitt and Tyler Sanders, produced by Ethan Huffnagel. Switchcast is an automotive entertainment and opinion show, and nothing we say should be taken very seriously. We do not give tax, investment, legal, emotional, or professional advice, and the only licenses we hold are driver's licenses. The opinions expressed on this show are exclusively held by the people pontificating at that moment and do not reflect the values of our producers or sponsors. Our theme music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. If you like this show, you can stream it in its entirety on your favorite audio podcast platform. Check out switchcast.live for more info.